From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from Pacific Heights.
I live in Fremont.
I live in Russian Valley in the Richmond District.
I live in the Inner Sunset.
I live in the Outer Sunset.
Coming up, we'll meet two men who climb trees to make maps of noise.
You know, we do our little part. Hopefully make people's lives a little more comfortable in terms of noise.
And we'll go from the treetops into a laboratory where engineers design the soundscapes of our lives.
Ambisonics is a magic bubble of sound.
And speaking of magic bubbles of sound, you'll learn more than you thought there was to know about mud pots.
Each pot's got its own particular personality.
We're all ears today on Cross Currents. Living in an urban area, we all hear a lot of noise, all the time. Planes, trains, cars. Hundreds of thousands crisscross the Bay Area every day, honking, whistling, roaring. But who says when it's just too loud? Casey Miner decided to find out in this segment of KALW's newest podcast, The Specialist.
Here's what I have in common with Nancy Gangotra's 4-year-old son, Justin. I do not like the sound of the train.
Justin, do you like the sound of the train?
Mm-mm, I don't like it. It's so noisy.
It's so noisy?
So noisy.
Whenever you open your windows, there it goes.
Justin and his family live in a housing complex in Fremont, California, maybe a couple hundred feet from the train tracks. I met them on a Saturday morning when I knocked on their door to ask what it's like for them to live that close to the train. I asked because I live near the same train line, about 30 miles north, and here's what it sounds like at my place in the middle of the night. 3:45 a.m. to be exact. And here's what it sounds like just a few feet from Nancy and Justin's door. So noisy.
It's so noisy.
It's so noisy.
I'm Casey Miner, and this is The Specialist. Today, we're meeting two people who figure out how loud is too loud to take.
Jared McDaniel, acoustical consultant.
Jordan Roberts, also an acoustics consultant.
Acoustics consultants. In other words...
Noise police.
The noise police. They don't have badges, but they do have sound level meters, accelerometers, and a mission to wait for a train. There are a lot of laws about noise. Federal law says Americans are entitled to be free of noise that, quote, jeopardizes their health and welfare. In California, that means if you live near a busy street, an airport, or a train line, your house has to be built so that when you're inside, with doors and windows closed, the noise isn't excessive. Excessive is a noise level that averages out to be more than 45 decibels over the course of a day, which is about as loud as a normal conversation, quieter than a dishwasher running in the next room. To find out if noise is excessive, someone has to measure it. The noise police.
He's got the vibration stuff.
We're in Fremont, in the vacant lot next door to where Nancy Gangotra and her family live. The biggest things you need to know about this vacant lot are that the city wants to build new housing here and that it's very, very noisy. There's a busy four-lane road behind us, a backhoe doing road construction, the train, obviously, airplanes. Oh, and it's windy. Basically, it's pretty close to the worst possible conditions for recording a radio interview or having a conversation at all. And that's what it's going to be like for the people who eventually live here every single day.
Exactly. And that's what you have to think about, is that we could potentially be sitting in our backyard right now. All of what we're hearing right now, you know, is going to be part of their life. And so that's what we're trying to document and quantify.
McDaniel and Roberts were already here a few days ago, and they measured the overall noise levels, the road, the trains, all of it. They do this by climbing up ladders and leaving microphones in trees to get a picture of how loud a place is on a normal day. The second thing they do, and the reason they're here today, is measure vibration, specifically ground-borne vibration caused by the train going by. Excessive vibration can be just as stressful as noise for buildings and for people.
It disturbs sleep and you know, building, it can damage building materials and crack your walls and stuff. So that's what this is for. So we can tell them where they can and can't build their buildings.
Do that.
They didn't want to cover it too much because they want to step on it.
Yeah.
To measure vibration, they're going to use a small instrument called an accelerometer that senses motion and acceleration. Once the accelerometers are buried, they connect them through cables to their recorders.
It's just a recording device, much as what your same exact instruments you're using right here.
He's pointing at my Marantz recorder, the one I'm taping them with. Not gonna lie, this makes me feel kind of awesome. So if you were just walking by, you'd see two guys in jeans in a field with a long cable attached to a small box standing really close to the train tracks and just waiting.
I feel like if I just ran across this, it would have kind of a sinister quality. Like it looks like it might explode or something.
I've had some issues in the past where I was doing one and a police officer came flying around a corner and somebody must have called him. He thought we were trying to blow up the train.
The noise police had to explain themselves to the actual police. Altogether, it takes maybe 15 minutes to set up. Then, we wait.
How close are we to train time?
We should. I'm looking at
it. I thought 10 minutes ago. I thought 12:20 was in my mind.
12:30 was in my mind.
Oh, okay.
So I could. I thought it was 12:30-ish. So we're looking.
Oh, wait. What did the schedule say? I think the freeway.
While we hang around, we talk about other projects they've worked on and why they do this work at all. There are lots of good reasons to protect people from noise. Sleep disturbance is a big thing, and poor sleep is linked to other health problems like heart disease and stroke. Living with noise makes people's stress levels spike. Over time, they can suffer hearing loss. A recent study in Sweden suggested that noise can even affect our weight. People who lived near freeways, airports, and train lines had more belly fat than those farther away. I actually think I increased my own risk of all these things by doing too much worrying about them wide awake in my loud room at 3:45 a.m. Noise can have bad effects on animals too, especially marine life. So a big part of what McDaniel and Roberts do is monitor underwater noise caused by building. They've monitored a Navy nuclear submarine project, a natural gas project in Alaska, and the construction of the new span of the San Francisco Bay Bridge. They usually go out in a boat and record with a hydrophone. That's a microphone you can use underwater. Sometimes I learned it also works outside of the water. Like when they dangled it off the new Bay Bridge and it started receiving radio signals. Somehow the cable made itself into an antenna, honest to God.
We were trying to measure kind of ambient noise underwater, which typically sounds kind of like a gurgling sound, like river flowing or a stream bubbling, and ended up hearing talk radio instead. It was kind of bizarre.
Christian talk radio, to be exact, through the hydrophone.
The people who were protected from the fury of God were the ones who were sighing and crying over all the abominations.
Usually, though, they skip the talk radio and actually listen to what's underwater. They go out in little boats or rafts and drop their mics near the construction equipment. Pile driving is the main offender here, pounding big steel poles into water to hold up bridges and docks. Here's what pile driving sounds like when you record it that way. Water muffles the sound, so as a human listening to this, it probably doesn't sound so bad, right? But to a fish, it's like the sound of firing a gun next to your head. In the Netherlands, researchers played recordings of pile driving for harbor porpoises in a pool. With nowhere else to go, the porpoises jumped out of the water to avoid the noise. When scientists at the University of Maryland exposed fish to similar sounds, they documented injuries ranging from organ damage to bleeding fins. Just like for people, there are laws about how much noise animals can be exposed to, and if it's going to be louder, whoever's in charge of the project has to mitigate it. My favorite solution to loud underwater noise is a thing called a bubble curtain. It's basically an underwater jacuzzi, a pipe or a set of pipes that encircles the steel pile and sends up a wall of bubbles around it to absorb the sound from the pile driver pounding it into the ground.
It makes a wall of bubbles or a ring of bubbles around, so the energy of the sound goes from water to air to water.
Got that? The bubbles absorb the sound waves, so by the time they get beyond it, they're a lot less powerful. Kind of like the difference between the sound of an airplane taking off down the street and making a smoothie in your blender. A lot of the worst effects happen with exposure over time, so another way to ease the pressure on marine life is just to give them a break from the sound.
If you exceed a certain level underwater, you have to stop for the day. Usually it's for the day. So you're not that we are, like Jordan said, we're not the noise police, but we'll say, hey, you're over the limit. And then, you know, they shut themselves down and then start the next day.
Noise police. I'm just saying. The noise police and I chat for so long that I almost forget to be on alert for the train. But then...
Well, it's go time.
I'll try to get speed.
Jordan, okay, cool.
We could split up the duties. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll... So let's go. Maybe if you could count number of cars, I don't have to think about that.
Yep, that was it. 10 seconds to measure, and then all over. When I checked in with them later, they told me that even though the train was moving pretty fast, because it doesn't go by all that often, the people who build the housing won't actually have to do anything special to counteract the vibration. All that outdoor noise, though, is a big problem. It's louder than the city allows. McDaniel and Roberts recommended building sound-absorbing walls around the site, requiring indoor ventilation, and using highly soundproof windows, which people will need to keep closed.
Part of what we do is, you know, we're saving the world or anything, but the sleep disturbance and people living a peaceful life is pretty important. So, you know, we do our little part. Hopefully make people's lives a little more comfortable in terms of noise.
Of course, that comfort comes at a price. Nancy Gangatra, who lives next door with her family, she told me that when she was pregnant with Justin's brother, the train would wake her up at night. Now, they keep the windows in their house closed at all times. Do you mind that, like having the windows closed?
At times, yes. I miss having open windows. We have more of air purifiers, which is not the natural way. But yes, we do miss it at times.
So, a confession. I actually don't keep my windows closed. That's part of why my noisy 3:45 a.m. bedroom is so noisy. I realize this makes my complaining my fault, but it gets really stuffy in there, and if it's too hot, it's hard to sleep. Anyway, since I don't want to close my windows and I can't wrap my bed in a bubble curtain, I decided to take the only remaining option and head for the pharmacy aisle at Target. So here we have two different kinds of Max earplugs for men and women. The women ones are bright pink. Earplugs. I have an ultra middle-of-the-night noise problem. I am going to buy the ultra man earplugs instead of the dream girl. Now, when I'm in my bed at 3:45 a.m., instead of sounding like this, it sounds like this. Not that I notice, because I can actually sleep through the night now. So one last thing. We talked about trains a lot in this episode, but the much bigger noise polluter is actually highways. You know those big walls on the sides of freeways? They're sound walls to block noise for the people on the other side. And the country's first one is still standing in Milpitas, California, just southeast of San Francisco on the side of the 680 freeway. For this, you may thank California transportation engineers John L. Beaton and Louis Bouget, who in 1968 wrote the report that got us that first sound wall. After spending some time listening to freeway noise, they wrote, quote, "You do not have to be a noise expert to expect certain public reactions."
I don't like it. It's so noisy.
It's so noisy.
KALW's Seth Samuel composed the music for that piece. And in case you didn't catch it, The Specialist is a podcast. You could subscribe on iTunes and listen when you want. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney. Now, we'll go from people who record sounds in our environment to people who shape them. Have you noticed the way a space feels really depends on how it sounds? Take the California Academy of Sciences. On any given weekend, there are hundreds of visitors, including kids, running around. You'd think it would be crazy loud. But listen, the voices are not overwhelming. That's because a San Francisco company designed the sound in here. Yes, they designed the sound. There's people who do this everywhere. They're called sound architects. And today we're going to learn how they do it in a place called the Sound Lab, where they can listen to the sounds of buildings before they're even built. KALW's Christina Loring takes us there.
Outside Arup's office on 2nd and Mission Street, it sounds like this. And it looks like any big office building. But when you go inside and upstairs into the Arup office, there's a mysterious door. And if you pass through with Associate Principal Josh Kushner, it sounds completely different.
To walk in at first when in its silent state is actually, to me, it sort of is a sucking sound. It's like, or this sensation that all the sound's been sucked out.
This is the Sound Lab. It's like you're walking into a cave, but instead of rock, the walls are made of foam. And instead of bats, there's speakers.
The system we use here is called ambisonics. That's effectively having a sphere of sound. So the room you're in right now, it's got four speakers on the floor, it's got four speakers at ear level, and it's got four speakers up in the ceiling.
Ambisonics is basically a fancy term for an audio technique that makes you feel fully immersed in sound. It's almost like you're wearing headphones on your whole body.
The difference between the experience you get in the Sound Lab and just listening to sound over a speaker system is similar to drinking a glass of water versus taking a shower.
Since we're washing ourselves in sound, I asked Josh to baptize me in the Sound Lab.
So the show's about to start.
Okay.
So what we're going to do is we're going to sit you in the sweet spot right here.
Okay.
So this is the ultimate listening position.
Okay, so we can't really bring the experience to you over our mono signal. You can't really replicate the Sound Lab in the car or the kitchen or wherever you're listening right now. But we'll try to give you a little taste.
So what this demonstration is it takes you through the sequence from a mono signal to stereo to 5.1 and to ambisonics. So the recording that you're listening to is at a cathedral in San Francisco, and all around it on the balcony. So the microphone's in the middle on the floor, and there's players and instruments and singers all around you. So it's a really good piece. So right now they're smushed, and they're smushed into this little virtual speaker right here. Right? That just went to stereo, which you should have heard it spread laterally from left to right. So next we're going to go to the 5.1 experience, which is the cinema surround sound. But it's all still on the plane of your ear, so you have no sense of height. So what we're going to do now is go to the ambisonic system.
It does feel like you're jumping in a pool of sound, actually, a little bit.
It's good. I like that.
So, it's a pretty great room. I want one. But how do they get the money to afford such a fancy toy? Well, it's because this place is a sonic simulator, and people pay Josh and his team to simulate sound.
I worked on a hotel in New York, and it was a boutique hotel, and they sell sleep at hotels, right?
Right.
And they had a fictional guest, which was Henry Kissinger. For some reason, he was like the fictional guest that stayed at their hotel for like $700 a night, right?
This is not an act that is free.
Right.
But anyways, so we created a virtual guest room experience for them in their new tower that they haven't built yet.
Which means?
We went out, we took recordings there and calibrated them. We took subway recordings and we calibrated them. And we even went out and measured their air conditioning system, what it's going to be.
they brought those recordings back and pumped them into the sound lab.
So we kind of created this virtual guest room where they walk in, they put down their bags.
And hear exactly what the room they had yet to build would actually sound like. The building's architects take that info, design to spec, and make the perfect sounding hotel rooms.
Would Henry Kissinger, whoever their model guest would be satisfied in this suite or not, right?
And it's worth checking out because that boutique hotel has to justify charging $700 a night, right?
Yes, I'd be comfortable with that.
They've got lots of high-end clients, like San Francisco's Opera, the California Academy of Sciences, and the new SF MoMA. Occasionally, they get a client who's an audiophile, just like them.
I'm waiting for my man.
One of the Arup guys heard that Lou Reed was unsatisfied with the reproductions of his live work. So they approached him about remastering his music using the Sound Lab. They wanted to prove that Ambisonics could make his recordings so good, it would be like his playing experience on stage back in the 70s.
Then if you're Lou Reed, you're not just hearing what's coming from the four speakers, but you're hearing the representation of reflections that were off the stage or sounds that were directly behind you or above you. And so that was the Lou Reed project, was actually to prove to him that we could use Ambisonics to give him a reproduction of his experience playing live.
Lou Reed loved it, and the Arup guys created an installation at Cal State Long Beach's Art Museum so that others could experience the music from the perspective of Lou Reed himself on stage. It's kind of like a magic power. You're creating a world the way you want it to sound. I asked Josh what sound he wishes he could get his hands on.
Almost every bar and restaurant you go into, right, is sort of public enemy number one.
Especially if they're blasting some overplayed classic rock.
I didn't want to single out Lynyrd Skynyrd, but there is that part of Free Bird where the solo guitar just never ends. And that's the part that I always seem to be in the midst of.
There are so many unpleasant noises around us.
Yeah, I mean, some train stations are absolutely horrendous. Airports.
Wouldn't it be nice if every place was carefully sonically designed? So everywhere we went, we could hear what we wanted to hear? Even if that's nothing at all. Josh Kushner and his team are working on it. In San Francisco, I'm Christina Loring for Cross Currents.
That piece originally aired last September. And finally today, we're bringing you the first episode of a brand new work from our engineer Chris Hoff, along with KALW alum Sam Harnett. It's The World According to Sound. It's also a podcast, and this is its broadcast premiere.
These are mud pots. They look like little volcanoes spitting up gray mud. You can only find mud pots in a few places around the country. That's because the conditions have to be perfect. You need geothermal activity to heat up water underground. The soil's got to be right to make the muddy, slurry mix. And you need faults and cracks in the ground for the mud to spurt out of. Put all that together, and you might get a little mud pot. We recorded these mud pots near the Salton Sea in Southern California. Each pot's got its own particular personality. Thank you. The World According to Sound is made by Chris Hoff and Sam Harnett.
Today we've heard from the Noise Police, sound architects, and Mudpots. Now we'd like to hear from you. Email us at news@kalw.org, find us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW, or call us at 415-264-7106. Because of you, we can proudly say we are listener-supported public radio. Our team includes Hannah Baba, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hambrick, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Casey Miner, Ted Muldoon, Emma Nobel, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Line producer was Liz Mack. Our managing editor is Jen Chian. Our managing producer is Julie Kane. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.